natural gas. Learn how Los Angeles reduced emissions for its entire bus fleet by switching to natural gas. Thinkaboutit.org.
For many, a charitable bequest is a unique expression of appreciation. The thoughtfulness of many individual families, like the Levinsons and Fines, has led to planned gifts which help WLRN sustain and grow. Through your will or estate plan, you can name Friends of WLRN as the beneficiary of your estate or a portion of it, providing an enduring legacy of public media for years to come. To learn more about making an impact through planned gifts, call 305-350-7977.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And this Sunday at 10 a.m. begins an epic voyage by one of our esteemed Radio Reading Service volunteers, Andrew Hayward Smith. He isn't just riding his Triumph motorcycle from Miami shores to Orlando or Daytona, but to the Gulf Arctic Circle. That's only 15,000 miles round trip, give or take a few. We'll find out why during his visit. Welcome to you, Andrew. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Joseph. Thanks for having us on.
Hey, Andrew.
Hi, Bonnie.
So what's the weather like in the Arctic Circle in November?
Well, I'll be back by November. I'll be in the Northeast United States by then. So, you know, I've planned the route so that temperature-wise, I can handle it. I'll be in Alaska and the Arctic Circle. Mid-August.
So, okay, so tell us about this ambitious undertaking. What drew you to it, and what gave you the idea to make it a fundraising effort?
It's an idea that gradually evolved over time. I struggled with it a lot, how it was going to work. I had an idea that I've always dreamed of going to Alaska and across Canada and seeing the Northeast United States. So for about 2-3 years, I've had this idea, okay, I want to do a trip like this. Then I thought, okay, how can we make it, do something worthwhile? How can we do it for charity? And I struggled with that a lot because I really couldn't pick one single charity. There's so many good charities out there, nonprofit organizations. That was the tough part. And I struggled with a long time until finally, March this year, I had a revelation standing on my back patio. I looked up at the sky and I thought, thank you. I know exactly how this is going to work and come together. It just all came from nowhere. I wanted to make it interactive, make it for various charities. It all kind of clicked in my brain at one time.
What, did you see the Northern Lights from Miami?
I think I might have done, yes.
Also with us is the Reverend Hallie Hoddle. She's the associate pastor of the Miami Shores Presbyterian Church. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And how are you involved in this?
Well, I'm involved as Andrew's support, as our church is supporting him on this ride. Andrew was in a Sunday school class this past Lent, and I was teaching this class, and he came up to me afterwards and said, you know, Pastor, I've got this idea.
Now, Andrew's in Sunday school?
Yes,
as
yes.
A student?
Andrew was studying hard. It was an adult Sunday school class, and Andrew was studying hard, and afterwards came up, and he said, you know, I've got this idea. I've had it for a while. It's kind of crazy, and I haven't told anyone about it, which is not something a pastor wants to hear on a Sunday morning. I thought, oh, wonderful. But he said, I've got it written out. I'm going to put it under your door later today, and so I read through it later, this proposal he had put together about riding his motorcycle this incredible distance. And originally, I didn't know, the only part that was unclear was I didn't know who was riding the motorcycle. And I thought he wanted me to do it.
Why don't you go along?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I've offered. For some reason, the church will not buy me a motorcycle.
Could be like Easy Rider.
So, Andrew, you list about 20 organizations, 20 charities mm-hmm. on the website, which, yep. by the way, is ArcticRideForDreams.com.
Correct.
Okay. And that includes the Miami Shores Presbyterian Church and Urban Promise, but you also have like Heifer International, Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. Must one choose from your list, or can they donate to another charity?
They can donate to any charity they want. Primarily, the tour is supporting Miami Shores Presbyterian Church and Urban Promise. Those are the two charities that have come out of this as the forerunners. Then there's suggested charities that are listed on the donate page of my website, arcticrideefordreams.com, charities that I personally believe in, Heifer International, Compassion, etc. But to answer your question, yes, anybody can pick any charity they want. The idea is that you donate directly to the charity. No funds are going through me, so 100% is going to the charity. And as long as you fill out the form on the website that lets me know that you've made the donation, so that I can keep track of the total raised.
And what is your goal?
I would love to raise $15,000 for each charity, the primary charities, Miami Shores Presbyterian Church, and then the Urban Promise Centers, of which there are six in North America, and of which I will be visiting each one.
You'll go to each one?
Correct.
Now, where will you be spending overnight? Are you going to have a sleeping bag with you? Or?
I do have a sleeping bag. I have a tent. I've got a frying pan and a stove. I've got everything ready. I'm going to try and sleep in comfort as much as I can. So if people put me up for the night, fantastic. I have about...
Or maybe now and then a Holiday Inn to...
Get
a good shower.
And a massage probably twice along the trip because my shoulders will be completely knotted. I have, out of the 120 days, probably about 9 days of accommodation planned so far. So the rest... 111 is just going to be winging it at
well,
the
that's
end.
Part of the fun of it, not knowing.
Exactly.
So what do you think are going to be some of the greatest challenges?
They're going to be mental and physical. I'm really glad that Miami Shores Presbyterian and Urban Promise are involved because they're going to keep me going. Everybody at Miami Shores has been so supportive, and there's been so many people rallying behind this idea that will keep me going. But 4 months on a motorcycle by yourself, not seeing familiar faces,
right,
you're seeing constant new faces, is going to be kind of emotionally draining. On a tour like this, I've done one before. On a tour like this, you're either doing emotional highs or you're doing emotional lows, and there's not much in between.
So did you make it interactive to make it less lonely, sort of?
I did do a tour in 2009, which turned out to be 14,000 miles in 60 days around the United States. This idea for this tour evolved the interactivity portion of it because of the fun that we had through Facebook on the initial tour.
I see.
People would
That's
say,
right. I remember now.
Exactly. I think you were part of the people that followed me.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would say, if I was in Seattle, go to visit Jimi Hendrix's grave or find Kurt Cobain's house or stop by this place. And so from that's how this tour evolved and the interactivity portion of it, because people can sponsor me to do certain things. They can tell me to do certain things along the way. Hopefully, they're good deeds and a mix of fun. So,
what would be your route through Canada?
As I approach Canada... at the end of July, I'll be coming from Montana, going west across, and I'll probably go through Glacier National Park just before Seattle, and then I'll dip into Canada and head west
to
Vancouver.
So you'll be going up through Vancouver?
Exactly. Vancouver, and then there's a little loop around to Prince Rupert, which is a little bit north of there in British Columbia, and then I'll catch the ferry up to Anchorage. I wanted to do it by sea on the way up for 5 days. And then after Alaska, I'll come back down.
So obviously you'll take the bike aboard.
Exactly. Tie it down and hopefully it doesn't fall over.
And why is it in the shop today? Just getting it ready or was there a problem with it?
There has been a continuing problem since November that it keeps stopping on me for no particular reason. So they haven't quite.
Well, maybe you should take the Reverend along. Yeah. have God's will with you. Then.
Pray over the bike before you leave. Don't worry about it.
We need to.
So, Hallie, how does this work with the church now? You'll be receiving dream submission ribbons, and you're going to put them on the steeple.
Yeah. So this is another crazy idea. Andrew first presented what he's doing to our youth group. We have a pretty large and active and overachieving group of young people at our church, and they wanted to be involved in this in some way. And so their idea that came out of that was that they would collect dreams from people that Andrew met along the way. So as he does this, he'll be asking people, you know, this is a fulfillment of one of his dreams, and so he'll be asking people he meets what their dreams are. and sending those to us via email and text and things. We're going to be collecting all of those and writing them on ribbons and then stringing the ribbons all over our church. So it will look like a crazy teepeed rainbow by the time he gets back.
A giant art project.
Yes.
Now, are you going to try to accomplish, are these dreams that they want you to accomplish?
No, these are dreams. This is part of the reason for the tour. I mean, I'm completing my dream, but I wanted other people involved because I want to inspire them to follow their dreams as well. You know, quite often we get stuck in a rut, you know, behind our office desks, and we think we can never get out from behind them, and we can never leave our lives that we've got, sometimes we feel so trapped in, and carry out our dreams. And I think when one person perhaps takes off and leaves their desk, it might inspire, or at least I hope it inspires other people, not to leave their desk. We don't want a workforce that's not working, but, you know, people follow their dreams. I hope it inspires them.
We're speaking with Andrew Hayward Smith. He's in marketing and advertising.
Correct.
And he's read for the Radio Reading Service here at WLRN for 17 years,
yes.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
And we're also speaking with the Reverend Hallie Hoddle, Associate Pastor of the Miami Shores Presbyterian Church. Need to take a short break on our program. We'll be back and take some calls.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. No More Tears is a nonprofit providing assistance to more than 270 victims of domestic violence and their children. Every day, they are accepting and distributing new household items, including children's toys, books, clothing, bedding, and non-perishable foods. You can get more information at nomoretearsproject.org. That's a notice from the WLRN Community Bulletin Board.
Hi, this is Guy Raz from NPR. You may have heard the TED Radio Hour on WLRN last summer. Now, a brand new TED Radio Hour is on the way. Starting this July, join me each Saturday at 2 p.m. for a journey through fascinating ideas and new ways to think and create, based on riveting TED Talks from the world's most remarkable minds. It's the TED Radio Hour with me, Guy Raz, each Saturday afternoon at 2, starting in July, here on WLRN.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And 19 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, also the Reverend Hallie Hoddle of the Miami Shores Presbyterian Church, and Andrew Hayward Smith. He's the man that will be starting to ride his Triumph motorcycle to the Arctic Circle. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, if you have questions, 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. Email radio at WLRN.org, and also by Twitter, that's at Topical Currents. Andrew Hayward Smith, you're a descendant of Ernest Shackleton.
Indeed.
The famed Antarctic explorer, and what a trauma he went through. In fact, I had one of his relatives who wrote a book about him on Topical Currents a few years ago. Tell us more about that. It's quite a legacy.
It is quite a legacy, and I'm thinking of actually the GPS device that I have that's tracking me across this journey, and you can follow me on the website because I'll be GPS tracked. I've named it Shackleton, and I'm thinking of doing this tour in honor of Shackleton. He was actually the age that he died is the same age that I am setting off on this
trip.
What
an ordeal!
Yes. So he was expedition to the Antarctic, they'd already got to the South Pole. He was one of the three people trying to get to be the first to the South Pole. He was beaten by Amundsen. And then the following year, I think in 1914, he decided, okay, the next big thing would be to cross the Antarctic on foot and be the first person to do it. So, and that was right at the outbreak of the First World War. Winston Churchill was Admiral of the fleet at that point in time, and Shackleton put his ship at Winston Churchill's disposal and said, do I go to the Antarctic or do I go and fight the war? And he left it up to Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill said, proceed, go to the Antarctic, do your best. So they sailed all the way down there, and this is 1914. Obviously, they didn't have all the modern gear that we have now. They didn't have the communication devices or anything like that. And they got stuck. They didn't even make it to the Antarctic. They got stuck in the pack ice in the Weddell Sea just north of Antarctica. And eventually, the pack ice crushed the ship. And there was about 25 of them, I think, in total. And they ended up living on Antarctica for almost 2 years by the time they got back. The expedition finished in 1917. And it was never recognized as a successful trip at the time because he never completed his goal. But since then... And
Just surviving.
It's become one of the most heroic stories of all time, I think. That's what Time magazine called it. Because he didn't lose a man. He got them all back. And he's counted as one of the greatest leaders of all, of time.
Now, how are you related? And when did you find out you were related?
We've known for a long time. He's my great-great uncle on my mother's side. And, my mother and father spent some time tracking back the genealogy of the family. So they worked it all out. So we've known for quite some time. They actually sent... They gathered Shackleton family members together and tried to send them down to the Antarctic, and they had a competition for one more place, and my brother and I entered the competition to try and be one of the party, but we didn't make it onto the trip.
Tell us more about the events, the send-off events that are going on at the church. You're asking other motorcyclists to come and help see Andrew off.
So we have this Sunday, we have worship at 10 o'clock, and we're inviting everyone to come, which we always do.
That's not mandatory, though, right?
Yes, that's mandatory. No. Everyone's always invited, but we're making kind of a bigger deal about it, and it's going to be a very kind of open and shorter service than normal, inviting bikers to join Andrew in celebrating this and taking off.
I saw something about bands.
Yeah, so after the service at around 11 o'clock, there'll be food trucks filling our parking lot. There'll be music provided. There's a band put together for it. And we will just eat and celebrate and have fun. And at about noon, Andrew will take off with a police escort out of town.
What kind of physical preparation have you made for this?
I've been asked that a couple of times, and the youth group at church was the first to ask me, how have you prepared?
Are you going to the gym every day? And
no. To tell you the truth, I haven't done anything. I intended and I started to walk, do sit-ups so that my abs and my back would be strengthened, push-ups so that my shoulders would
be
strengthened.
You might want to get your glutes in shape,
exactly,
too.
Exactly. And I have a little wrist strengthener, one of those grips that you can keep gripping, and it strengthens your wrist because there's no cruise control on this bike. I'll be holding that throttle open the whole day.
How many hours a day are you going to be driving?
This trip, I think it's going to be about 6 a day. Okay. I'm planning for 250 miles a day, give or take, depending on the day, depending on the weather, et cetera,
right,
et cetera. Yeah. But I've been pretty much a couch potato. I haven't done anything.
Well, let's hope it works out for you, Andrew.
Exactly.
A real Lance Armstrong. Let's go to a call or two. We've got Fernando in Hollywood. Hi.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
Hi, Fernando. How are you?
Good. I'd like to ask you some questions about your trip.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
What kind of motorcycle will be driving? I know it's a Triumph, but my bike is...
This one is a Triumph Bonneville, so it's the kind of retro-style boutique bike. It's
a 900, I imagine, right?
Exactly, a 900, yes.
Oh, wow, that's a beautiful bike.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
What kind of mileage are you willing to ride a day?
About 250 miles a day. I did a tour in 2009 where I planned 300 miles a day. A lot more mileage is possible on a motorbike if you're driving a Harley with a comfortable seat or something like that. But this has a bench seat. I mean, it's literally like sitting on a cushioned bench. There's no contour shape or anything to support you. So,
come on, Reverend. Come on, doesn't that sound inviting?
Definitely.
So about 250 miles, I think, is about all I can handle each day because I'll be getting off the bike.
Okay.
And
are you taking any spare tires, tubes? What is your preparation regarding once you be out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah. I have a Spot Connect GPS device, and that has the capability to change my iPhone into a satellite communication device. So if I get into a SOS situation, I can hit the SOS button and it'll send my GPS coordinates and send out a rescue party, thankfully. And I can also send text messages with that. I'm not taking any extra spare tires because I can't fit them on the bike, and I'm not mechanically minded, believe it or not. So
I guess you'll have to get an oil change in there somewhere.
I'll get some oil change. I have a new set of tires waiting for me already in Vancouver. They'll be on-road, off-road tires. I'll swap them out so I can take on some dirt roads and things like that. But
now, when you get on the ship in Canada, I guess you'll really kind of live it up there.
It's a ferry, actually. It's not a cruise ship. Yes. So I'm not doing a cruise, something, unfortunately.
Oh. No four-star accommodations for you.
I misunderstood.
No, it's the ferry, so it'll be... I do have a cabin, thankfully, so I'm going to take those 5 days as a rest.
Tell us more about Urban Promise. You're stopping... There's six of them, is it? You're stopping in six cities. I saw there are a couple in New Jersey. Tell us more about them.
Yeah, Urban Promise is a faith-based organization that started in Camden, New Jersey, and it's a program that helps under-resourced children and youth through summer programs and after-school programs that are always free of charge for the kids that participate in them. And it's grown. It started in Camden, so I was acquainted with them when I was at seminary in Princeton. Bruce Main, the founder and president of Urban Promise, taught some urban ministry classes at Princeton, and it's grown since then, so it's in all these different sites. And I was talking about Urban Promise at the church, and Andrew happened to look them up and realize that all of the sites were on the route that he was mapping out. And so he was able to connect with them and get them kind of excited about it. So we'll be collecting dreams from all the Urban Promise kids over all of the North American sites. And taking
That's great. Time.
What kind of adversities do you expect, Andrew?
Weather will obviously be one. I'm hoping that I don't run into any grizzly bears or polar bears or coyotes or anything like that. Punctures is a real risk, especially on the Dalton Highway, which is the last part of the journey up to the Arctic Circle. And that's the Dalton Highway is also known as the Hall Road, which is also known as the Ice Road Trucker's Road. It's pretty much gravel for a lot of it.
Between that and being on a cushioned bench, it does not sound...
Now, in the U.S., will you be taking some interstate highways, or are you going to be doing the scenic route on the U.S. highways and state roads?
If I need to get up some speed, I'll definitely take the interstate highways. But the way to see this country is definitely get off the interstates and take the back roads as much as you can. And you don't lose too much time doing that. But if I need to pick up the pace, I'll have to take the interstate. Yeah.
And, Hallie, I see you're from Chicago. How'd you get here? And how long have you been at the Presbyterian Church in Miami Shores?
Yeah, I'm from a small town in Illinois called Monmouth. But I went from there to... seminary at Princeton Seminary in New Jersey, and came down here having no idea what I was doing. Got called to a church in Miami.
Oh, the Miami Church called you from the seminary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I've just been here for about a year and a half and having a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Inspiring everybody and supporting a guy going off on a motorcycle.
I still think you ought to go along.
Yeah. So, Andrew, how are you going to do all this updating of the website and all that stuff? You're bringing a computer, obviously.
I will have a little laptop with me. Thankfully, these days, you know, smartphones, you can do a lot of them.
I can actually
update my website from my smartphone if I want. The Facebook page, obviously, is easy from the smartphone. So with those two devices, I should be fine. There are certain sections of the trip that I just won't be able to make an update because there's no cell phones coverage, but you know, I think for most of it I'll be able to update people.
Well, Andrew Hayward Smith, I hope you make it back and continue to read on the WLRN radio reading
Thank
service.
You, so do I.
Yes.
That you're not just missing in action somewhere.
No, God forbid.
Before we agreed to support him, we had made him promise he would come back. So that is his goal.
Actually, some of the donations and some of the most touching donations that have come in, the goals that people have sponsored me is come back in one piece. So I've had a client sponsor me, come back in one piece.
He might meet some Inuit woman or something, and who knows?
Who knows?
Well, we certainly want to thank you and wish you the best. Give us a thumbnail once again, Reverend, about the send-off activities.
Yeah, so Sunday morning at 10 o'clock at Miami Shores Presbyterian Church. We'll have a shorter worship time all together, and then we'll have food trucks, music, just fun happening. Everyone will be writing their dreams to start Andrew out. And then at 12 o'clock, we will wish him well as he takes off.
And Andrew, the website again is arcticrideforDreams.com.
That's correct. And there's a matching Facebook page where I'll be posting updates as well.
Okay.
Well,
all the best to you.
Thank you.
Good luck, and I hope the elements are kind.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us on.
Thanks for coming.
Food and Dining, up next.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Streaming online, as always, that address is WLRN.org. Mostly cloudy in Miami at the moment, 87 degrees, now just a 20% chance of thunderstorms this afternoon.
Florida National University offers a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. According to the American Nurses Association, an aging boomer population is driving demand for nurses. Classes available online and on campus. Details at 305-821-3333.
Hi, I'm Michael Stock. Every Sunday on Folk and Acoustic Music, I present the best in contemporary and traditional bluegrass, blues, gospel music, world music, and folk music, plus interviews in the studio. This week, Harvey Kaufman visits us. The Public Storyteller is at 4 o'clock, Folk and Acoustic Music Sunday, starting at 2.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Bonnie, Thursday has finally arrived. Always a nice way for you and I to close out the week.
Yes.
And of course, joining us now is chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. So Linda, next Thursday is Independence Day, of course. No Topical Currents that day. And usually we talk about, on your 4th of July programs, cookouts, picnics, family gatherings, but today the subject is more defined. The hot dog, or yeah. Frankfurter, Wiener, Red Hot, etc.
That's right. Thinking about food for the 4th? Well, it's coming up, as you said, next week. And as you said, whether you call it Franks, Wieners, Red Hots, hot dogs, they're as American as apple pie. And we're going to find out more about them and how they became American icons with our guest, Bruce Craig. And he's the author of, and we've got the book here, it's a wonderful title, Man Bites Dog, Hot Dog Culture in America. Let's welcome Bruce Craig. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. And also, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have a hot dog question, or what do you serve on hot dogs? Now, I put this up on the Facebook, and I got many, many, many suggestions from lots of people. We'll go over as to what they put on hot dogs.
What about the non-carnivorous? Are there soy dogs or something?
Well, we'll find out. Let me give out the phone call. The phone number, it's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Are we having email today, Bonnie?
Yes, we are. It's radio at WLRN.org, and we're also taking tweets at Topical Currents.
Oh, new this time. Tweets now.
Yes, tweets.
Okay, well. And our favorite wine columnist, Fred Tasker, he isn't with us today. It's his daughter Annie's wedding coming up, and so we want to congratulate
love
her.
Love is in the air.
And wishing the family all the best. We've kind of grown up with Annie. It's fun to know that she's getting married. But you can read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald, and he will be back with us. So Bruce Craig, Man Bites Dog, great title. And I love, there's a photo, the photos in the book are wonderful, but there's one of the dog biting the dog, biting the hot dog.
Yes, that was taken in New Jersey at a wonderful little cart. And that dog walks by that cart every single day, and every single day, Ranieri, the owner, gives him a hot dog.
with the bun, with the whole thing.
Yes.
And what does he take on it?
Actually, she serves a plane, but I think being a dog, he'd eat about anything.
Well, the complete title of your book, Man Bites Dog, is Hot Dog Culture in America. So what is a hot dog culture? Is that an oxymoron, culture and hot dog?
I know. It's not a cultured hot dog. It's a, although, you know, some places advertise themselves as such, as a joke. Hot dog culture is the way that hot dogs fit into American popular culture. And in jokes, books, movies, vaudeville, because I go back in time on this one to show the origins of the word, mythologies, also hot dogs are dangerous, so there are a lot of warnings about it in our culture. So once you start looking, you see that there are hot dogs everywhere.
Well, there are. There are. And you say to fully savor a hot dog, it has to be eaten in its native setting. So what's a native setting for a hot dog?
Well, a native setting would be where the hot dog is served, the locality in which it's served. So if I'm going to eat a Coney, a Detroit dog, of which there are two kinds, I want to be in Detroit. And at either, say, American Coney Island or Lafayette Coney Island, and that's where it really belongs.
So how? So what goes on the Detroit dog?
Well, there's a chili. It's not actually a chili. It's a meat sauce that has a long history, which is very interesting, and ethnic history at that. And it's peculiar to Detroit. It's not actually a chili. Again, it's a meat sauce, and the meat is in all these places is ground up. It's beef is ground up separately. And put into this special mix that they make. But it's not just beef; it's beef hearts.
That excites us.
Actually, you know, when I do tastings, you know, and discussions, and it's served, people like it. You'd be surprised.
Until you tell them what it is.
Sure, it's kind of like, well, most in foodie circles, people are not squeamish, so. But in other circles, they might be. Anyway,
so hot dog people eat hot dogs are in foodie circles. Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, so many. Let me use an expression. So many hot dog eaters are fressers. They'll eat anything.
Well, I don't know. And, all right. So tell me something. One of the settings I know, you walk down the streets of New York City, and they're selling hot dogs off the stands there.
Yeah, that's a wonderful place, and that's the New York's the place with the most stands in the country. There are roughly 3,000 carts serving all kinds of things, but the originals were hot dogs, and they used to be dirty water dogs. That is to say, they're just heated up in water, but lately they've been changing to flat griddle dogs.
But wait, sorry, dirty water dogs, what's that?
Yeah, hot dogs put into hot water, not boiling water, but hot water.
So why is it dirty?
Well, because the grease leaks out.
You're really turning us on to these hot dogs.
And it's a good environment for bacteria, I suppose.
Right.
It's okay if it's warm enough. So I don't think there are too many cases of people getting food poisoning from the carts. But lately they've become flat griddled, and the reason is because we have so many Middle Eastern carts serving shawarma and other things and kebabs, that hot dogs have become that as well.
Well, you said culture, and I thought it's so different. What they serve on hot dogs in various cities is so different. What's the difference between a hot dog in Chicago as opposed to what they serve on it in New York?
New York dogs are plain, and they're much more like the original hot dogs served in the 19th century. And that is a plain dog. It's either, again, hot water bathed or flat griddled. And in the stands, you know, like Nathan's and Papaya King and such, they're flat griddled. And
so
they're put on a bun.
Right, go ahead, sorry.
They put on a bun, and they're served with mustard. You have to have mustard. And either onions or a red onion sauce, which is invented in the 1930s, or sauerkraut. And that's basically it. So the Chicago dog is much more complex, and that has on it a hot water bathed bun, dog, preferably natural casing, one hopes, in a bun, and on it is mustard, chopped onions, neon green relish, tomato slices, pickles, sour kosher pickle spears, and topped by small hot peppers called sport peppers, which are grown specifically for the Chicago market. And if you want celery salt.
Bruce, I'm from St. Louis, big German population. Tell us the history of St. Louis and the hot dog in the 1904 World's Fair.
Well, there's a whole mythology about it, none of which is true.
And okay.
All right, forget it then.
I like St. Louis a lot, actually. And they have a really good sausage culture because it's German. And so it's no accident that all those beers come from St. Louis. Because when Germans came, they brought not only sausages, but their beer, the kind we drink commonly today, Pilsner. They did serve sausages, absolutely, at the World's Fair, and they were in buns. The buns go back to the 1870s. So they were eaten, and they were mostly made by local butchers. So they would have been really good. There's no specific St. Louis style. It's just a sausage or hot dog with mustard and onions, basically.
Okay. Bonnie, do you have a question?
Well, sort of. It's a question for Bruce. It's from Evan. What did the Dalai Lama say to the New York City hot dog vendor?
Make me one with everything.
Oh, you knew.
That's the oldest joke there is.
Okay. Can't catch him up. Okay. So
they should have been tofu dogs, right?
Yes, exactly.
So what you're really telling to us is that we can tell where a person's from by what they put on their hot dog.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, in Chicago, you never put ketchup on a hot dog. In fact, the city has set up a border patrol. You know, the border, they're going to increase the border with Mexico because of this new immigration bill. Well, we have one in Chicago, and anybody who comes in saying that they're going to threaten to put ketchup on a hot dog, they're instantly stopped at the border or deported.
And I understand that they don't even have ketchup there to go on the French fries. There's no ketchup.
No, there's a famous stand here in Chicago where they don't serve ketchup, but right next door to it is a McDonald's, and people who go over to McDonald's to put on their fries. And McDonald's began, you know, those little packets they have?
Yeah.
Well, McDonald's began charging for the packets. So many people. It's a place called Gene and Jude's, which is a wonderful place. Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Well, you
That's
know.
Where they are.
I don't know if there's a special topic. We're here in South Florida, in Miami, and at one time, Nathan's Hot Dog asked me to do a study on what Miamians would like to have on their hot dogs. And, you know, we thought, well, it should have Latin flavors and all, and I was so surprised. The resounding answer I found, don't mess with a hot dog.
Really?
Sauerkraut, onions, ketchup, and mustard, all acceptable and all together.
Right. Well, that's, again, that's because Miami have a very large New York population, right?
I guess so, yeah.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, Nathan's years ago decided to open in Chicago.
Yes.
And they asked me, I was at their headquarters, and they asked me whether they should, and I told them not to do it because Chicagoans would not eat New York hot dogs. So they assured me that they would never serve New York hot dogs in Chicago. And sure enough, they opened a place. Cost probably $1 million to open. It's a spiffy place on Rush Street.
How are the dogs? How are the dogs at Wrigley Field?
Well, they're not very good. But
did Nathan survive in Chicago?
No. What happened is they went out of business in 6 months because they served New York hot dogs.
Oh, and what goes on at Wrigley Field?
Well, Wrigley Field used to have fairly.
I do know it's baseball.
Good for you, Linda. We're proud of you.
They've become much better recently. In fact, at ballparks around the country, the hot dogs have become much better as they've gone upscale. So people are looking at local vendors. Wrigley didn't used to have Vienna beef, you know, the Chicago hot dog, and now they do. And they're putting different things on them, and they're better hot dogs. So anyway, they've got better. They got much more expensive as well.
Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest today is Bruce Craig. He's the author of Man Bites Dog. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Robin Young.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson.
We are the hosts of NPR's new program, Here and Now, coming in July.
It's a news magazine that will keep you up to date with the day's news that breaks in between Morning Edition and All Things Considered.
And introduce you to people doing amazing things far from the headlines.
It's Here and Now with Jeremy Hobson.
And Robin Young, Monday through Thursday at 2 o'clock p.m., starting July 1st, here on South Florida's NPR news station, 91.3 WLRN.
Hello, Bonnie Berman here. Join us for Monday's Topical Currents when we visit with former NPR editor Elizabeth Becker. She chronicles modern tourism in the book Overbooked, The Exploding Business of Travel and Tourism. Dark tourism opens former torture chambers and death camps for the curious, and of course, sex tourism is rampant. Dubai makes more money on tourism than oil exports, and though it only has the area of the state of Missouri, France receives more visitors than the United States. Learn more on Topical Currents Monday at 1 o'clock.
We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and our guest is Bruce Craig. He's the author of Man Bites Dog, Hot Dog Culture in America, and he's been telling us all about the American hot dog culture. And now it's dinner in minutes time, and here's something else you can make to go with your hot dogs on next Thursday, 4th of July. This one will spice up your 4th. It's another take on burgers. These have a barbecue flavor, but you don't have to go out in that hot heat and heat up your barbecue. They're a Texas turkey burger with corn and black bean salad. And they get their big bang from jalapeno peppers that are mixed with mayonnaise. I didn't make it spicy enough for you, Joe. Mm. I guess not. Okay.
Don't ever put mayonnaise near a hot dog.
Well, this is on a tuna burger, which you wouldn't have anyway, I'm sure. The barbecue flavor comes from mixing a smoky barbecue sauce with the ground turkey. So you make your turkey patties and you saute them in a skillet. Then you mix some jalapeno pepper with mayonnaise. And you just put it on a bun with some tomatoes and lettuce and the mayonnaise. And you're all set. And quick corn and black bean salad, very colorful. Just defrost some corn kernels. If you have frozen corn kernels, a real simple way to do it is put them in a colander and run some hot water through them in the sink, or put them in a microwave. Rinse and drain some black beans, toss them with some vinaigrette sauce. It's very colorful, very pretty salad. And the complete recipe and a photo is at dinnerinminutes.com. And also please follow me on Twitter. That's at L.L. Gassenheimer. And as I mentioned, Fred Tasker is not with us. His daughter's getting married, and we're very excited for him, and congratulations to Annie. But he did write me a little something for your wine for the 4th of July. The proper wine for nearly anything on the grill, says Fred, is that I always call it, it's a good old American red Zinfandel. And he said for decades, Zinfandel was also called the all-American wine made nowhere else in the universe, but they did find some that it actually had DNA tested. I didn't know they DNA tested grapes, but they did DNA tested. And they found that it was served before Christ, which was interesting. But here's the deal now. California Zinfandels today is a robust, fruity, powerful red wine that has the spice to go with barbecue and the alcoholic heft to go with anything from New York strips to pork chops to salmon. And he likes to have that bitter black marks on the salmon. And I suppose we could do it with some hot dogs as well. It shows America's real strength, says Fred, that we're not a bunch of, quote, sniveling purebreds. We're a nation of immigrants. So even more than before, Zinfandel is the official wine of the 4th of July. And as Fred says, now let's all sing the Star Spangled Banner. And I'd like to hear Fred sing it, but maybe not on air. Well, Bruce Craig, what do you drink with your hot dog?
Well, usually you should have beer, but I have to say, I was talking to some chefs in California, and we were noodling about this, what wines go with hot dogs, and they thought a Pinot Noir from maybe Oregon or the north of California, Russian River, and I think Sauvignon Blanc for a Chicago-style hot dog.
Oh, well, okay.
So with the texture and sweet, sour, salty, hot flavor profile of the Chicago hot dog.
And what kind of beer do you recommend?
Well, there were so many microbreweries, I hate to say it. I hate to recommend one. you know, Sam Adams would be okay if, for a national brand, but there are so many really good local IPAs. That's what I would do.
If I visited you in Chicago, where would you take me?
To get it done. To a hot dog stand, I would take you to Jim's Original, which is founded in 1939, a little actually before that, and they invented the Maxwell Street Polish. And what they do is, they have griddled onions, caramelized onions on a flat griddle, which are to die for.
Wow, I bet those are good.
And there are a few other stands in Chicago which are just great. By the way, Fred, mayonnaise is a common condiment in Europe and South America.
On a hot dog. So there you go, Joe. Okay,
well,
Joe.
Well, I'm an American.
It was Joe who said that. Okay, as I mentioned earlier, I had several people on my Facebook gave me what they like, and one kind of surprised me. She puts homemade potato salad on her hot dog.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, you know, in Latin America, there's something called a completo, and that's just what you think it is. It has everything on it, including either potato chips or potato salad, and various other, lots of mayonnaise, melted cheese, you name it, it's on it. And so that sounds fine to me.
Well, we have a phone call here. Kate in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Linda, how are you?
Great. Do you have a question or a comment?
Well, Linda, you should know what a dirty water dog is. I'm astonished. I thought everybody knew, but then I'm a former hot dog vendor from the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
And everybody takes hot dogs seriously that goes to a hot dog vendor generally. And I used to vend up at the beach outside all the nightclubs.
Where would people
come down from New York. Typical Snooki types, because Snooki doesn't live in New Jersey. She lives in a different area. And they would come there, and they'd tell me about all their hot dog vendors in New York. And, you know, on Highway 46, the lady who used to sit atop in a bikini in the middle of winter on her hot dog truck. And, you know, anything goes in New York and New Jersey on a hot dog, unlike, as your guy said, you know, from Chicago, where they don't care for hot dogs. I mean, I had garlic, hot pepper, the soubrette style canned onions, they love those for some reason. I had to carry soubrettes on my cart. If I didn't, they would know it. So it was a very interesting experience, really.
So you don't have your cart anymore?
No, that was back in the 80s. And
now, were you the one wearing the bikini in the winter?
Well, you know, there were people I was in Belmar, Toms River, New Jersey. There were women down there that did that, and they got run off because there was a court case against them because there were too many car accidents, which also happened down here, apparently. In Fort Lauderdale, I know they ran those girls off, too. So I ran more of a clean shop, and I went to Rutgers, and I had three hot dog carts, and they were primarily at that nightclub. During the day, sometimes I'd park across the street from McDonald's and get their overflow. I had T-shirts that, you know, said Hot Dog Katie's, you know, Belmar, New Jersey. It's really part of the whole climate of summertime appetite, you know.
Bruce, did you want to ask her something?
Well, she told me where she was in Belmar and Tom's River. I grew up in Tom's River, actually. I know the Jersey Shore quite well. And when I was growing up, there were hardly any hot dog stands. But that grew up. Later on in the 70s and 80s. And now there are, and in the book we have a couple of famous stands, Max's and the Windmill.
The Windmill Hot Dogs, the Schickhouse Spring.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're almost out of time.
We have to run.
Thank you for your call, Kate,
right.
From New Jersey and now Fort Lauderdale. We are almost out of time, but I just wanted to say, what's a ripper?
A ripper is a deep-fried hot dog, and it is a New Jersey specialty. And you can get, and Rutt's Hut is the most famous place.
Yeah.
And you can have an in-and-outer, which means you put it in the oil and it just splits open.
An in-and-outer?
In-and-outer, right. And then you can have a medium one, which is more split open. And then you can have, if you're really adventurous, the cremator, which is burnt black and completely inedible.
Joe's nodding his head in big smile. So that's your favorite, Joe, huh?
I like those charred ones sometimes.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time. So it's been a really interesting week. Bruce Craig, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
His book is Man Bites Dog, Hot Dog Culture in America. You need to have it for the 4th of July. And I'd also like to wish all of everyone here a great July 4th next Thursday. So I'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then. And
2 weeks, where are you going?
Oh, well, we don't have a program next week. So I'll be back.
We'll have a happy 4th, Linda.
Everybody have a, and eat a lot of hot dogs, Joe.
Okay.
Okay.
Sometimes I have to bail them out. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction by Caroline Berater Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and past programs at our website, WLRN.org. More links and information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter as well, at Topical Currents. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with a look at the changes in the modern tourism business. It's as powerful economically as energy, finance, and agriculture. And on to the calendar. On this day in 1880, 133 years ago, the birth of deaf-blind author, activist, and lecturer Helen Keller in Tuscumbia, Alabama. In 1920, she helped found the ACLU. And on this day in 1969, 44 years ago, New York City police storm into the Christopher Street's Stonewall Inn, a Greenwich Village gay bar, at 2 a.m. A riot ensued. It's considered the start of the gay liberation movement. One more while we recall that 8-second Olympic boxing knockout. On this day in 1988, 25 years ago, Iron Mike Tyson unifies the heavyweight division with a 91-second knockout of Michael Spinks in Atlantic City. Both fighters entered undefeated. Spinks never fought again. We leave with a thought from Helen Keller, who was actually related to General Robert E. Lee through her grandmother. Quote, "The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt within the heart." Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer. Stay tuned now for The Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is 9.